We're back with Teacher Talk, sponsored by the Columbus Education Association, who is solely responsible for the views expressed. I'm Sue Miziak, your host. On this year's Election Day, Tuesday, November 5th, a very important initiative for our school district will be on the ballot. I'm very pleased that Dr. Dan Good, Interim Superintendent of the Columbus City Schools, has taken the time to join me on Teacher Talk to discuss the upcoming operating levy and bond issue. I hope that through our discussion, we will also learn about the man, the educator, and the administrator. Welcome to Teacher Talk, Dr. Good.
Thank you, Sue. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm so happy that you are here today. This is your first time appearing on the program. I hope it's not the last. And I've looked forward to meeting you and hearing about, you know, maybe some of your first impressions of Columbus City Schools. But also, I know that we are both here to talk about the upcoming levy that we will, as I've already mentioned, we will see on the ballot in November. Dr. Good, you were formerly superintendent of the Westerville Schools before you retired. And, you know, I'm a retired teacher myself, and sometimes it takes a lot to entice somebody to come back into this whole thing, and especially when you're looking at a troubled school district. Were you made aware of all the problems when the position was offered to you?
I had certainly monitored the media's coverage of some of the issues in Columbus City Schools, so I had a cursory awareness. But it still seemed to be the appropriate calling for me in retirement.
And why was that? I mean, retirement, that, you know, that sounds to a lot of people like, you know, the time when we're going to take it a little easier and just more or less dabble in things, maybe not go into something that's quite as challenging as this position.
I think for me, retirement is an opportunity to really integrate all of your social, emotional, intellectual, and capitals. And this position seemed like one where I could align that integration successfully.
It seems, too, as if it would be a position where you have, in a sense, a little more freedom because you were brought in to take a look at what we had and how corrections could be maybe made, changes could be made, and also looking at the future. That's a pretty wide spectrum. Am I hitting this right, Dr. Good? Or come on, help me out here.
Columbus City Schools is a wonderful district. There are amazing things occurring here. They have attributes that no other district with which I've been associated has. And we certainly have opportunities to make those more public and even exploit some of those and replicate them district-wide and hopefully industry-wide. I did have the unique opportunity of being able to look at the work of the district in the past, understanding the strategic initiatives they'd undertaken, the plans they had developed, and certainly the Columbus Education Commission's recommendations for improvement. And so understanding how all of those things work together to allow us to create a better system for the future is what intrigued me and actually is what exhilarates me each day.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I know that a lot of people who are not as familiar with both districts, they might wonder, well, are there any similarities between Westerville and Columbus City Schools? But I know for a fact that actually there are quite a few similarities.
There are similarities. Westerville City Schools is one of the largest districts in the state, at one time boasting 10th largest in the state. Like Columbus, a very diverse community. We speak 73 different languages in Westerville, whereas in Columbus, 93 some languages are spoken as a first language other than English. One-third of the students in Westerville are non-Caucasian, and 32% are disadvantaged. So we have some of the same issues that pretty much any district faces. It's just the scale is somewhat different.
Mm-hmm. And I know that for you personally, I've read that, you know, some people might say, well, can this man identify with our students? Because we just had a superintendent who was a graduate of Columbus City Schools. And yet I've just read recently that you yourself came from an impoverished background and that you might actually, you know, be able to identify with what some of the challenges that our students face.
I think children are children, no matter what their background. Certainly our own circumstances were by all federal classifications poverty, but we didn't know that. We were surrounded by a family and a community that based their foundation on their faith and education. And as a result of that, we each found our way to success, to employment, and to have families after high school. So yes, I suppose there are some similarities where I could find some relatability to our students' mm-hmm. circumstances.
Well, now, Dr. Good, as you decided to accept this position as interim superintendent, what did you determine were the most important changes that you needed to address in this district? And I guess, you know, I just realized I phrased that. What did you determine? Were some of these determined for you?
I think they were.
Or was
determined.
It a combination? You know, what were these?
Thank you, Sue. It's a both and, absolutely.
Yes.
In looking at the local report card, we certainly saw that the literacy targets are low-hanging fruit for us, and they are the foundation of all learning. So making certain that we provide the support for our students to achieve those reading targets had to be our number one priority. There were a number of other things that our community have told us are important to them, having high-performing schools in every neighborhood. And so finding what's working in one neighborhood and making certain we're able to apply that overlay to buildings in areas where they're not high-performing is important to us. Many of our students need to see now a career pathway. And this was certainly one of the goals of the district before Dan Good arrived. And we want to, again, make certain we create many of those opportunities for our students. And we have done so through so many business arrangements and nonprofit organizations that are supporting us so that students have a context for employment when they are learning content. It's not so mm-hmm. conceptual anymore. And that's why our programs at Downtown High School, at Fort Hays, seem to be the ones that are bursting at the seams, because there's such a demand by students that want to be certain once they graduate from high school, they have the opportunity for gainful employment or even to start a business. And additionally, those that want to serve in the military want to be certain they're having experiences in high school that prepare them for that as well. And of course, those that wish to go to college, we have college track programs. So I think the stage was set. One of the things that I believe is a skill set I offer to Columbus City Schools has been what I was trained to do in Westerville and also in Worcester, where I served previously. And maybe serendipitously, there were issues that really required our community to come together
mm-hmm,
and
right.
practice shared solution seeking. And we engaged our chambers of commerce, our city council, the nonprofits, the faith-based organizations, our business leaders, parents, and even non-parents in helping us to determine what was most important and how we would go about joining hands and solving those problems together. And I think that model will serve us well in Columbus.
Right. Now, you are working on a number of goals, some of which you've already kind of touched upon. Can you go into those just a little bit here?
I'd be happy to. We set three interim goals that the board heard, and the first was to be certain that each and every child really realizes their full potential, prepare to go to college, secure a job, serve in the military, or even start a business.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you, Dr.
Yes,
Good.
Ma'am.
But, you know, we hear that, honestly, every single time, that this is a goal of a school district. I've heard this before. And I totally am on board with this. So is there any difference here? Or is this a goal that always has to exist? It always has to be, you know, right up front there.
So let me expand on that
sure.
just a little bit, if I may. Maybe even, Sue, when you and I went to school, a lot of the content wasn't necessarily taught in a vocational context or in an armed services context. For many of our children, particularly those coming from disadvantaged economic situations, college doesn't seem to be something that's even feasible
mm-hmm.
for them. And so they need to make certain they see the possibilities. For example, we met with the Teamsters last week and talked about the apprenticeship programs that they offer and how we might be able to tap into those so that our students were getting those experiences as well as learning the content they needed to graduate. We are exploring a number of other, and already have a number of other, senior to sophomore programs where students are getting dual credit for the work that they're doing to prepare them for a career in the medical industry or the logistics industry or business or hospitality services. And these programs are the ones that are in the most demand for
right.
our students. But that wasn't always the case. Many comprehensive traditional high schools don't offer those career tracks. A student would have to elect to go to a career technical center, or what we used to know as joint vocational schools. But now they're embedded in the comprehensive high schools as an alternative program for those that may not see college
mm-hmm.
as the first step once they graduate from high school. An increase in our junior ROTC programs, again, will accommodate that military
very
avenue.
Popular program.
It is a very, very popular programs indeed. And again, in order for students to be successful in any of those programs, they have to have the literacy skills that our report card indicates we're not meeting.
Right, right. And even looking at our younger students, and I know you're including them all here, but I know that we have some very, very wonderful programs that we are right now putting into play that are going to help those children meet the third grade reading guarantee. And we'll be featuring some of the individuals who are involved in that on Teacher Talk later this year. Well, let's talk about some more of these goals. You know, I'm going to right now just say that one of them that is really interesting to me has to do with the technology in the district.
Indeed.
Will you speak to that?
I will be happy to. The second overall goal is making certain learning environments are student-centered, efficient, and stable. And in addition to making certain we recruit and retain appropriate talent, we need to take advantage of the technology benefits. Right now, I would not describe Columbus's technology system as robust or necessarily 21st century responsive. I had a great meeting this morning, in fact, with our chief information officer to talk about how we could make certain that all of our libraries and laboratories have thin client solutions, how we can move toward making certain all of our campuses are Wi-Fi accessible, how we can change our computer workstations for teachers so that it only takes 60 to 90 seconds for that station to boot up. And you can imagine how important that is in today's day and age for communication, but also for record keeping. When teachers are moving from classroom to classroom or building to building, they need to be able to boot up a system quickly in order to enter student grades or to put assignments for students to access
or attendance.
Online or attendance. And as well, we parents, we need to make certain that they can access those records in real time. There's no reason to wait till the end of the 9 weeks or even the end of the semester or even worse, the end of the year to find out that a student wasn't in school or didn't complete assignment or perform poorly on assignment. And if we're expecting our community and our parents to become more engaged and support education, we need to make certain they have access to the same information. Technology can help us do that, but presently it's non-existent.
Wow. Well, I know that there's more we can say about this learning environment, but I think we need to move on to the third goal.
And the third goal is really being accountable to this community. Obviously, there have been issues of trust, and the community wishes to have more confidence in their elected governance board and the administration that operate their schools. So we have done a number of things. There are many policies that have been adopted and aligned guidelines that are being crafted to make certain it's very clear who has access to data entry systems and how that data is entered and what the appropriate coding is for that data. We've brought in a new performance and strategic initiatives director who really has a reputation statewide for being a data guru and understanding exactly how to input that data, but even more importantly, how to extract it and look at it and make appropriate inferences so that we're aligning our treatments where students have educational gaps so that we get a greater effect. And that's the joy of having someone that's been an administrator at all three levels, has also run alternative systems, and has that data background, and this individual happens to have that. So again, it's being more accountable to the community. Our community has asked us to reduce overhead, and we've eliminated 11, I think it's 10.5 actually, administrative positions for a savings of approximately $1.5 million. We've deployed many of our administrative services to buildings to add extra hands. And some of our administrators and teachers on special assignment that were not in buildings have master teacher attributes. And so their value is known best when they can model in the classroom,
right,
trade teach, team teach, and offer reflection to those teachers. But again, it's more adults being models also for students, as well as providing those interventions. We're working on making sure we're very transparent in all aspects of our organization. We've updated our website. We're placing more of our meeting minutes and our committee minutes on that website, making certain the community knows when meetings will occur. And there are a lot of meetings. That's pretty much how I spend my weekends and evenings now. And we visited with a number of civic associations. I believe we had approximately 120 different meetings on the calendar just for September. And I've been pleased to learn that the goals we proposed as interim goals seem to reflect the thinking and the desire of this community.
Wow. Well, it sounds like it's a very ambitious agenda here. And one of the ways that we're going to make this work is leads us into our next topic, and that is the actual combined operating levy and bond issue that will be on the ballot on November 5th. And I'd like to spend the rest of the program, Dr. Good, talking about this particular need. First of all, what factors determined it was time to put a 9.01 mil combined levy and bond issue on the ballot? Because that's a biggie. That's a biggie. And I know that when you were in Superintendent Westerville, you had to face these very same kinds of issues. This is a very large one, and it's going to cost homeowners quite a bit. So can you address those two things? What determined it was time to do this, and also how much it's going to cost homeowners?
I am, and I'll begin with the latter question. So one way I like to think about it is it's 87 cents a day for every $100,000 of value of your home, which is, I believe, around $26.25 a month, or $315 a year. It's a large ask, undoubtedly, but it's also a very specific plan for improving Columbus schools, and that's how it differs from issues that were requested in the past. First of all, and one of the most important pieces of it is the accountability piece. Issue 51 creates an office of an independent auditor, and right now our district lacks checks and balances that are found in other local governments. Our internal auditor does an amazing job and reports directly to the Board of Education, for whom she conducts audits. So this auditor would actually report not only to the president of the board, but also to a probate judge, the city council president, the mayor, and others.
So much more accountability than in the past.
Much more accountability than in the past, right. And much more like other government entities. The pieces of the operating levy then include the classroom technology that I spoke of,
right.
Making certain all of our campuses are Wi-Fi. We actually begin to give, in the state, all of our assessments online in 2015. And so our students need those experiences online prior to that in order to have their best chance to demonstrate their knowledge. This will provide one-to-one correspondence, tablets and notebooks for middle schoolers and high schoolers, and one computer for every four students in the elementary. Early childhood, the effects of early childhood are staggering. Students that come to school with high-quality preschool experiences score well on the Kindergarten Readiness Assessment for Literacy. In fact, 88.4% of the students that are enrolled in our 44 preschool programs are ready for kindergarten. And what we need to make certain of is that we're replicating those district-wide and making certain they're accessible and affordable to families, whether they be the district's preschools or whether they are preschools offered by other entities. And the way you do that is talk about the standards and share resources so that the rigor and the relevance is there, and we're building the relationships with those partners to ensure every four-year-old in Columbus City Schools has access to. That doesn't take away the right of a parent not to enroll in that, but it does make it available to them. That's the commitment of that part of the levy. High-quality teachers, we've heard interesting presentations from a number of providers on how they can guarantee that the teachers we're hiring actually have a predictive validity, that the students enrolled in their class will show a year's worth of growth. And so the data is such that we can employ those tools to make certain we're only hiring the brightest and the best. But beyond that, we have to make certain we're retaining them here.
Right, right. And that's been a big problem quite often in the past of teachers who have been outstanding, who not only as educators, but sometimes in some of the extracurriculars as well. And next thing you know, they're in Gahanna.
Or they're in a different school in Columbus. And
right.
So we made a commitment to keep our high-performing teachers and principals in their high-performing sites. And this, again, is something I've heard from our community as we've been out talking mm-hmm. to different organizations and associations. But we need ways to incentivize people staying in those sites, because some of them require a unique set of skills. And so we certainly want to keep our high-quality teachers. Having more A and B-rated schools in every neighborhood is a priority for us. So we're establishing an innovative fund here. So let's say that there's a school that wants to lengthen their day or offer particular access to the building in the evenings for a program that supports homework help or has activities for the community to reinforce that neighborhood legacy and tradition. So this is a part of that levy that will support that. And we are only looking at replicating A and B schools in this district. So those that fail to be high performing will be those that we will change. And then better public school choices. There is a goal of enrolling every student in an A or B school by 2020. And so this levy also provides some funds for high-performing nonprofit charter schools. And in Ohio, those are known as community schools. And those schools would have to partner with the school district to increase the number of seats they offer in underserved areas. They would be subject to the same accountabilities as the district. They would be subject to the same standards as the district. And so right now, I don't know that people realize that nearly 15,000 of Columbus City School students attend community schools. And so those students, the funding for those students actually goes to those schools. And so they are publicly funded. This actually wraps some more parameters, some more standards for achievement and accountability around those nonprofit entities to ensure everyone's getting that high quality experience.
Well, you know, Dr. Good, I recently had on this program CEA President Rhonda Johnson, and we talked about this very, very same topic because it certainly is kind of an inflammatory topic for many teachers who are in the Columbus City Schools, who are teaching in the public schools, and, you know, a concern, well, what is going to happen if some of this funding from the levy, if it passes, ends up in the charter schools. But Rhonda was, it was very interesting speaking with her and listening to her explanation of where the funding would go. Now, I know that you are forging a relationship with CEA President Rhonda Johnson, and, you know, teachers will always be very important in promoting a levy.
Absolutely.
I remember those days when I was helping to work to promote levies in our district. So have you had the opportunity to meet many of the teachers in this district?
Well, I've been to 70 of the buildings. We have 113 schools, and my goal was by October 15th to shake the hand of every employee in the district and wish them a good year and offer opportunities for them to make suggestions on how we can be better. And they have risen to the occasion, clearly. It is a wonderful, highly dedicated, very professional faculty and staff in this district. Two of my large group meetings before school even went into session in August were with the custodians and then also with the nurses. And we laughed and laughed for an hour and a half, but we've set up a suggestion box where people can also make substantive suggestions. And I spend my weekends responding to those suggestions and moving forward those that really probably will have a big outcome in terms of student achievement. I wouldn't say that we're forging a relationship. I would say we have a very positive, productive working relationship. I was invited to address the faculty reps at their meeting last week. And again, we laughed and share some of the same hopes for Columbus City Schools.
All right. Well, and of course, you know, you are an educator, and I think that when we look at these different issues that are coming up that we hope to support through this levy and through this operating levy and through this bond issue, we want to know that this is going to be not only something that's going to help us now, but will be an investment for the future. But that's kind of hard sometimes to convince people who don't have any kids in the Columbus City Schools, but they live in this district, or if they're empty nesters. Very quickly, what can you say to those individuals?
Oh, investments in public education show their rewards in the economy of the overall city, in the values of our homes and other properties, in our ability to have our children return here, raise their families here, and sustain those family relationships. And so many of our historic neighborhoods are multi-generational, and many of the families with whom I've spoken would like to see their great-grandchildren go to school the same place where their great-grandparents went to school. And we have to have high-quality schools in order to keep that workforce here. And we have to graduate workforce-ready students in order for them to be employed here and then reside here. So I think it's a good overall investment to sustain Columbus's rating as one of the number one locations to live, work, learn, and play, and pray in Ohio, or in the nation.
Really. And, you know, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Dan Good, for appearing on this program and talking to us about the Columbus City Schools operating levy and bond issue. It certainly has been a pleasure having you on the program. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much.
And I hope to see you again. This concludes our program. Please listen to Teacher Talk the first and third Tuesdays of each month. A podcast of this program will be available on WCBE.org. This is Sue Misiak wishing you a good night.